Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Women of Color Network, Inc. Hour, where we will discuss specific topics related to gender-based violence and its impacts on the African-American community. The Women of Color Network is an independent Women of Color-led organization that has been in existence for 20 years. We are excited to have you on this evening. And if you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your homes or relationships, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-733-7233. That's 1-800-799-SAFE. And we will get started with the show. Good evening, everyone. My name is Tanya Lovelace Davis, and I am the CEO for Women of Color Network, Inc., and we are excited to have you all on the show with us this evening. The Women of Color Network, Inc. represents hundreds of women of color advocates and activists serving in the trenches across the nation. We bring you information, data, stories, opinions, practices, philosophies, approaches, strategies, and years of experience. But most of all, we bring you informative live talk with a range of expert guests. This evening, we're going to have a special hour and an opportunity to have a dialogue across the most important topics that have been happening and occurring this week. Once again, if you are listening and are in immediate danger, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. And I am going to be one of the co-hosts this evening, but I'm going to pass it to Ms. Alice. Ms. Alice, are you there?
Good evening, and welcome to our listening audience. I'm delighted to be with you this evening. I'm traveling, but hey, the telephone is a wonderful thing. We're having a special show this evening, and we are going to have an opportunity to have a conversation with our guest tonight and to talk a little bit about the mass killing in our U.S. history. The tragic attack upon the LGBTQ nightclub Pulse in Orlando in the early hours of June 12, 2016. We hope to focus our discussion on what it feels like to be targeted in the LGBT community during Pride Month and the intersections of race, class, gender, identity, and sexual orientation with the largely Latino and people of color victims of the attack, and the overlap of domestic violence and terrorism within this case. In addition, towards the end of our show, we're going to have a conversation about the upcoming Women of Color Network Inc. Blue Lips Campaign 2016, what it is, how it relates to this subject matter, and how listeners can help and respond. So I'd like to turn it back over to Tanya. Is there anything else you want to add to what the discussion is going to be about?
Yes, we are joined this evening by Gabby Santos, and Ms. Alice will be further introducing her in a couple of minutes. But this evening gives us a chance to really once again express our deepest condolences as the Women of Color Network, Inc., to LGBT communities across the nation and worldwide with the understanding of what they, again, have experienced this week, and what the nation has experienced this week, with really the largest mass killing that our country has faced. What I'm going to do now is just read a statement that Women of Color Network issued on Monday in solidarity with LGBT communities. And we wrote that Women of Color Network, Inc. mourns the loss of 50 lives and injuries to 53 people in the largest mass shooting in U.S. history in Orlando at the LGBT nightclub Pulse early Sunday morning. This was not just any event at Pulse. This was Latin Night, in which it is reported that many from the Latino or Latinx community and communities of color overall were in attendance. At least 8 women died, including bouncer K.J. Morris. It has become widespread understanding that this has been both a hate crime against the LGBT community and a terror attack in allegiance to ISIS. WLCN Inc.'s Jagged Justice stance is again reinforced, demonstrating that marginalized communities are often the first targeted in gun violence and bear the brunt of slow responses by legislators to address gun control. It is particularly jagged that this occurred during this 2016 June Pride Month and in the 47th anniversary of Stonewall Riot. Our hearts are with the loved ones of those who were injured and lost at Pulse and with all LGBT communities everywhere during this time of loss, trauma, amplified hypervigilance. This is also occurring during Ramadan. Our hearts also go out to Muslim communities who may also experience heightened backlash at this time. Finally, it is reported that the shooter was abusive to his wife, who had to flee from him. The multi-layered issues present in the case, in this case, calls for collective resistance to all forms of violence and tyranny. WLCN Inc. asks for widespread education and social change and for much-needed gun control. Underserved, unserved, and inadequately served communities will continue to receive the worst impact without it. And again, in solidarity, Women of Color Network, Inc. Ms. Alice, I'll pass it to you to introduce Gabby.
Well, Gabby Santos is the Director of LGBT Health Services for In Our Own Voices. She has worked with victims of trauma since 1994 in roles ranging from inmate support group facilitator to policy work on behalf of LGBT people of color. Racial justice work, transgender activism, and criminal justice reform are at the heart of her passion. Gabby is committed to promoting the sexual health of LGBT people of color and their communities in order to end health disparities. She provides leadership to various projects, including Unity Through Diversity, a national LGBT people of color health summit, and the annual Black and Latino Gay Pride of the Capital District of New York. She is also a member of our Asana Board of Directors and the National Latin Alliance Against Sexual Violence. Welcome, Gabby. We're so glad that you were able to join us tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Alice. Thank you, Tanya.
One of the things I want us to talk about while we have you on the phone is that one of the things that we should look at is how this has truly impacted but not only your community, but I think has impacted the country in general. And to have an opportunity to share, to give you a voice, to share, since you are working with communities of color and the LGBT community. So how is the staff of In Our Own Voices and those you serve feeling at the time of loss and this hypervigilance?
Well, we at In Our Own Voices, we promote the health and well-being of LGBT people of color, and we do it in a culturally specific way. So what that means is everybody from our board to our volunteers and our constituency identify as LGBT people of color, and we're part of the community. We're grieving ourselves, and at the same time, we're here to provide support for the community who has questions, a community who is feeling all a range of emotions, rightfully so. And in that, we continue to struggle to build that collective voice to work against issues outside of just this one incident. On a daily basis, we face barriers. On a daily basis, we face discrimination and we get targeted. So the targeting and the oppression is nothing new, and the pushback that we receive from people who don't support our work, that's nothing new. And at a moment like this, a national crisis, is when we have to get together even more and come up with ways to support each other while still continuing the work. So I know personally, you know, prayer helps with that, talking about it, using my support system, and humanizing that we are going to grieve in many ways. Immediately when this happened, our executive director, Tandra LeGuan, called us. This was, you know, on a weekend, gave us a call and said, we need to do something about this. We're gathering, you know, we're having a vigil, we're organizing, and we sure did. We provided a safe space for our community to get together and just be together and support each other. And then we invited people who aren't the usual suspects, because we were like, okay, you know, this is not only our community, but you should be a part of the solution as well. Although we don't all contribute to the violence that we experience, we all should be a part of the solution to end it. So that vigil was a point of entry for people extending their support in other ways. We also met with the staff, and we had a circle of just checking in with each other, because we, again, we're part of the community. So this is a national crisis that impacts us locally. And like you've been seen in the media and on social media as well, we are Orlando. We represent the stories that we hear on a daily basis from the communities that we engage and the communities that we still have yet to reach.
Thank you. Tanya, do you have a question
there? Sure. Yes. Thank you, Gabby. That was so beautifully put. You know, definitely, we are all Orlando. And it is, I truly appreciate you being able to clarify and make it clear that you are both serving and supporting communities. Also, you are the very people that are impacted as well by the day-to-day attacks and challenges that and barriers that your communities, that you're serving face, and that... you know, that at the same time that you're providing care to others, that you're also caring for each other. You know, we understand that this event occurred on Latin night, and that the majority of those who were in attendance were largely Latinx and people of color. Can you talk about the intersectional issues that arise given this particular reality within this attack that occurred?
Certainly. Now, what this event has helped bring up is that we exist within LGBT communities, Latino communities, people of color. We exist. We're part of the LGBT movement as well. And what we've seen is that nationally we've advanced around marriage equality, military inclusion, family-based adoption, other issues, workplace harassment, violence. But the one thing that we still have to advocate for is that there are issues that are particular to the lives of communities of color who identify as LGBT, such as basic needs, housing, our HIV status, healthy sexuality, education, food justice. And so these are the things that as a community of color, oftentimes we are dismissed as not being a part of the LGBT movement, therefore not having our voices on legislative issues, legislative priorities, initiatives that matter to us, seeing us as an afterthought. So although we've lost 49 community members, and in that, it's not just the people who died, it's also anybody who's been impacted, the rest of the victims who are in the hospital, the family members.
Yeah.
A community grieves. It doesn't just happen to one person or even just the LGBT or Latino community. The vicarious trauma is real. But what we can say is that at the intersections, this whole sentiment of anti-Latino, anti-immigration, the racism that happens, and the homophobia and the transphobia that exasperates that oppression. Now we can have our space. Now people are looking to us and saying, oh, okay, well, you know, there are some of you in the movement and getting closer to us, leaning into the fact that although it might be uncomfortable for them, it's due time for them to ask us what we need from them as allies. And this is our opportunity to shine in that moment, to take leadership, to galvanize others and say, you know what, you are a well-intentioned movement, you as in the LGBT white allies and the general public. Well-intentioned movement, a lot of good work has happened in advancing some issues that matter to us, but you're missing this and this and that. And it all starts by trusting the leadership of communities of color. And I know the Women of Color Network can appreciate this because the work that you do is just that, highlighting the leadership of women of color and their communities and families and their loved ones. And in that, we also exist, LGBT communities of color. And that's one of the things that I appreciate from the Women of Color Network, that you are supporting In Our Own Voices and working with us alongside and looking to our leadership around LGBT issues.
Absolutely, that, you know, you hit it on the head when you said that WOCN connects with and really amplifies the leadership of women of color and their communities and very much at the intersection and really ensure that communities are able to represent themselves and, as you stated, including and centralizing LGBT community voices. I'll pass it to Ms. Allison. But before I pass it to Ms. Allison, I do want to let everyone know that, I guess she is no longer on. It's Samaya Coleman, who is our co-host generally on the show. Looked like she was joining us, but it looks like she had to step back. There are storms happening across the country, and she's in that location. So, Ms. Alice, I'll pass it back to you.
And I just need to say that not only was it the Orlando community that's been impacted, I think this tragedy has impacted the whole country and others, and other countries as well, because it's real clear that this was a hate killing, that it was not something that anyone did to somebody to cause it to happen. It was purposely set out to do it. I think it's impacted so many people's spirits, their mindset, all the innocent people who were killed unnecessarily. And I just feel that this country maybe now is ready to have the kind of conversations we need to have to make sure this doesn't happen again. So I just had to put that out there because this is, this should not have ever happened. So the other question that's coming to mind is that, of course, people are blaming the Muslim community, but we know that they also experience hypervigilance following terror attacks and realizing that there are also Muslim LGBTQ individuals. How does your organization, In Our Own Voice, provide supportive services to your broad constituency, including the Muslim community?
Well, for one, we flip the script and create a healthier narrative around religion and how it ties into homophobic or any sort of violence. We know that violence exists in all communities. Violence abusers and perpetrators are from various communities and various religions. I know that the media is saying that this was someone who had alliance for ISIS. This could easily have happened with, you know, in the name of white supremacy or any other. It's easy to target just one reason why this happened. There are contributing factors and many of them, and they're all rooted in the power to continue to marginalize those with the smallest voices, the LGBT, people of color, people who are not of the dominant culture in general. So for one thing we start out by saying is that, no, this wasn't just rooted in someone who is in alliance with the Muslim community. So that's one, being an ally in that way. The other that if we talk about this terrorist attack or whatever, then we also have to look at domestic terrorism, you know, if you want to use that language. Language is a very powerful tool. You could either use it to heal or to hurt someone. And so we have to be careful how we frame things. And those of us who have the power to do media advocacy, media is a very powerful institution that influences many households. So therefore, we have to talk straight about where it's really coming from, which is, one, we don't know all the facts, but what we do know is that this person acted alone, that this person has been influenced many years within a household that maybe is homophobic or not necessarily due to religion, because all religions, including Christianity, can promote homophobia some communities. So looking at that, this cuts across socioeconomic status, religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, and even gender identity. And this whole conversation about now that he was dabbling with the in quote-unquote gay behaviors or gay dating sites or whatever, and that is also a message that we need to reframe, because sexual orientation is different than sexual behavior. So, you know, can't easily say that this person is a part of the LGBT community, right? And that's why there's power in self-identification, and we can't just go with the messages just at a surface look. So what InterAll Voices does in terms of supporting Muslim LGBT individuals is creating that inclusion, that we see spirituality and faith as a strength in dealing with adversity and being able to come out. And that could be a resource in the coming out process. Even if someone doesn't experience the affirming, the sense of affirmation within their immediate religious community, then it's about building new community and still being able to practice the faith that fortifies someone, whether it's, you know, Muslim, Catholic, you know, and another religion. That's something that we each have a right to practice. And even though we're LGBT, that some of us see it as a strength, faith and spirituality. And I will say personally, without faith and spirituality, my coming out process wouldn't have been as manageable, because that's when I got closer to the Lord.
Can you just talk a little bit more about sexual orientation? It's not anything about sexual behavior, because I think I get what you mean, but I'm not sure if our listening audience will get it.
Yes, and if you don't mind, I can give examples as well.
Yes.
I know we didn't talk about graphic or whatever. I'm not going to go into a lot of graphic, but and what I like to say is that there's a difference between feeling uncomfortable and unsafe. We will never make this an unsafe conversation, but there might be things that might make people feel uncomfortable, but I'm going to ask that you take a risk and lean into that, because that's the best time to grow, and questions are welcome, yes. So sexual orientation is how you feel about who you are attracted to emotionally, sexually, physically, and even spiritually. Now, that is an orientation. It can be very fluid, and at the same time, that's something that you own. Nothing can take that away from you or, you know, compromise on that, regardless of environment or any triggers around you, or that's going to be you regardless. Now, for safety reasons, some people manage that differently. Depending on where they are, they might not express or out themselves as being LGBT, right? But that still is their sexual orientation. Now, sexual behavior are actions that one takes based on, you know, who they are with romantically, sexually, what their interests might be, and that is very, very fluid. And due to social norms, we have gendered sexual behaviors. So therefore, I will give you an example. If you have a heterosexual couple, a straight man who is his sexual orientation is straight, but yet he is experiencing with sexual behaviors that society says is a gay act, then, you know, that might be seen as automatically assuming that he's gay because he engages in those behaviors. Or because of the patriarchy and the misogyny and the sexism that we've grown up with, I even have a lesbian and bisexual women who come into our support groups and say, you know what, I am the stud, I'm the masculine one, and I'm not going to partake in this type of sexual behavior because studs don't do that. I'll leave that up to my femme. So therefore, then they might not be truly sexually liberated because they are gendering their behaviors. It's that whole traditional gender role that leads to borderline, sometimes abusive situations and sometimes domestic violence if it's a non-consensual dynamic and an imbalanced dynamic in the relationship. So these are the things that we have to be careful because our sexual orientation does not dictate what our desires are sexually. And that doesn't dictate, you know, how your desires and how you express your sexual desires shouldn't dictate your sexual orientation. There is a lot more to defining sexual orientation than just sexual behaviors.
Thank you. That was a great explanation. I mean, when you made the statement, I said, oh, okay, I get it. Then I thought about it again and said, do I get it? So thank you. Thank you for...
Yes, and this is why we run into problems with, like, you know, bullying and that happens in school.
Yeah,
there's a statistic that really speaks to how we need to start seeing the root causes to bullying to not just be LGBT or to not just be that, you know, a youth is gay or whatnot. It's much more than that. 78% due to the Rainbow Coalition on just high schoolers alone did a study, and 78% of high schoolers were sexually harassed based on gender expression alone. What this means is, this is gender expression, nothing to do with sexual orientation. And what this means is that their behaviors were not conforming to traditional gender roles. An example may be someone, a young boy who wasn't into sports or who was not hyper-masculine and chooses to be in theater or home ec. So therefore, the assumption is because this teenage boy is behaving this way that he might be gay. So this then leads to targeting of and bullying. So we got to think about, because of these social norms, people, not just LGBT, everybody is hurt by these norms.
Again, thank you for clarifying that. That's important. Time flies when you're having fun, and we need to take a quick break, and so give us a minute, and we'll be right back.
To Sister Tanya Lovelace and the staff and advisors of the Woman of Color Network, on behalf of Tony Porter, Bishop Freeze, and a call to men, all the men here want to say thank you. We want to recognize and thank you for the hard work and efforts to address and challenge the rights of women of color in the movement today. We just want to let y'all know, we ain't got nothing but love for you. Nothing but love. Out to all the women of color, from a call to being gay to well-meaning brothers, cause we appreciate the hard work that you do. With all due respect, we just wanna say thank you for challenging us all to be better people. Like Dr. King said, we all created equal, staying on the front lines of the struggle, always to the rescue for women in trouble.
rhymes like sexual assaults and DVs, eliminating violence on women and families, addressing human trafficking and police brutality right here in the United States, and that's reality. Well done, sister's job well done, for the call to action for each one, teach one. So from a call to men and all his well-meaning brothers, sisters, we ain't got nothing but love for ya. Love for the Women of Color Networking. God bless Sister Tanya Lovely. You-
Thank you for hanging in there with us. This is Alice Lynch, your host for tonight's show, along with Gabby Santos, Director of the LGBT Health Services, and Tanya Lovelace, who is the Executive Director, the CEO for Women of Color Inc., Women of Color Network Inc. So, Tanya, did you have a question you had for Gabby?
Sure, I do, and I just want to just add, you know, Gabby, you gave us really, really great understanding, deeper understanding around gender identity and gender expression, the ways in which that draws targeting, and both from the school grounds to, you know, adult living. One of the questions that I have for you is, looking at the situation that occurred with Pulse, you know, often, you know, one of the articles that we posted when we talked about Pulse, or and when we gave our national statement in solidarity, what we also noticed was, you know, it stated that there were some women of color who were impacted by the attack. But what we also are clear about is that gender expression may not have been fully recognized in that case. And so I imagine that there are trans women and men that have gotten lost in the count, and that there's no clear understanding of how that community was represented in that attack. Can you speak a little bit about that and how our audience should be thinking about this as well?
Certainly, and I think that once you get systems involved, then there's a different lens that is used to assess the lives and the stories of individuals, and then that gets, you know, from law enforcement, they did an investigation, and then that gets passed on to the media. And what we know is that transgender is an experience, is an identity that not everybody transitions in the same way. So we know that there might have been people who legally might not have transitioned, but that didn't mean that they didn't identify as trans, right? So there are three ways of transitioning. That could be the social transition. Is someone saying, you know what, I identify as trans because my assigned sex at birth and my gender identity do not match. Now, then that means they tell friends, they out themselves as trans, and they might even choose a new name and then share their pronoun. So that is transitioning socially, right? And the other could be transitioning medically. Not everybody transitions medically, and that might mean hormone replacement therapy or, you know, sex reassignment surgery and other ways of body modification. And then the other is transitioning legally, you know, changing your name, your birth certificate, and depending on which state, you will encounter different barriers to that. So, and with communities of color, let me tell you that because we face more health disparities, we also face more legal barriers and lack of access to the advocacy that is needed if one does want to transition legally or medically, even medical advocacy. And if we think about communities of color who maybe English is not their first language, and even though you have LGBT mainstream organizations providing that type of service, they might not have culturally specific or even culturally relevant support services to make that happen. And So what we do at In Our Own Voices is we honor people's trans experience, regardless of whether or not they would want to transition in any way. And so going back to the victims in Orlando, so I have not seen anybody being identified explicitly in the media as being trans, but that does not mean that we didn't lose any trans people of color in that scene. And we only know by maybe the stories of their loved ones if they've outed themselves as trans or if they shared that identity. Because based on a law enforcement assessment of looking at IDs or looking the legality, we can't use that as being an accurate source.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Just basically that the folks that were represented there were generally across gender expression and gender identity. And so just for clarity for the audience, that our hearts should go out to folks across that understanding and across that experience.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Great. Ms. Alice, do you have any questions?
Okay. This question that I have for you is that, you know, WOCN posted the article from the LGBT online publication that used the term queer women of color. And we shared with that WOCN Inc. supports reclaiming of language and the broad ways that we all choose to identify. Can you talk a bit about the language so that our audience can learn more about the many ways that LGBTQ community self-identifies?
Yeah, so certainly we know that there are umbrella terms that you've seen, whether it be in printed material or on TV or that people use in community, LGBT for one, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. Sometimes you will see the Q for queer or questioning. You might see other acronyms depending on where you are geographically. What I want to say is that at In Our Own Voices, we use LGBT because we recognize that there are some communities who still have not reclaimed the Q, the queer, because historically it has been used pejoratively against our community to hurt us. Now, there are movements of people who are reclaiming it, and that's great. One of the promising practices that we use is mirroring other people's language, however they choose to identify. But because we know that there are a lot of communities of color who still don't reclaim queer, and then generationally, too, we have elders who still aren't going to be reclaiming queer, we honor that we use the LGBT as the umbrella, and then based on individual encounters, then we will go ahead and mirror their language and honor how they self-identify. And I'm going to say that there's a slide that I use in our cultural relevancy trainings that says, getting it straight, and it has LGBT dot, dot, dot. And the beauty is that our communities are always evolving, that you think you got this whole exhaustive list of LGBT terminology, but at the end of the day, our youth are coming up with new experiences and new identities. You know, they're leading the way in reframing language and letting us know that, you know what, don't ever just sit back and think that you're the experts in cultural relevancy or that term cultural competency that implies the finish line, which I don't like, that it's an everyday experience to building your ally skills. You know, even us as part of the LGBT community, I have to every day work at being an ally to my Native sisters, for example, African-American communities, people with disability, people who have developmental disabilities even. You know, the privilege, the power and privilege that we hold, we have to put in check to make sure that we're using the safest language that we can use. But even that is not a guarantee, and at the end of the day, you just do your best. And the one thing that we don't do is assume, though. I'm not going to assume, depending on how someone presents themselves, how they want to be addressed and how they identify. I have learned that asking is a courtesy that I owe to anybody. just because I appreciate when someone asks me and not assumes. So that's a good question, just to have the conversation, check in with people, and that's part of building relationships. You check in with people. Don't assume.
You answered the second part of my question. Was, is it okay to ask how they want to be called? So
yes.
What name do they choose? And so I'm glad you said, yes, it is okay to ask. In fact, it's respectful to ask.
Yes.
So thank you for that, because I think what happens to people who aren't from those communities, they don't know what to call you, so how to refer to you. And so and I always tell people, ask. You know, but people are fearful of asking. All right, Tanya, it's your turn.
Sure. Well, thank you. And you know, I want to just add that, you know, there was a huge dialogue on our page on that post. And, you know, what largely was happening was that there appeared to be people who were straight or heterosexual identified, who were responding and taking issue with the language. And so what we were really trying to do was to really educate that folks should really embrace self-identification, but I also quite, you know, respect and hear the way in which In Our Own Voices tries to make room for all of that by using LGBT as opposed to sort of the longer phrase with the several different letters that are there, because you want to give room for people to self-identify and for generational differences as well.
Yes,
so thank
and then,
you for,
and also we always have to know the history of how language originated. You know, it's good
yes.
to know that. Don't be using something that you don't know it's derivative. I mean, I just so with queer, it was mostly academia world, and you do have some people of color who are part of the academia world who reclaimed queer, right? So and but mostly primarily white academia came up with queer. So that's
yes.
the other thing as well, as a LGBT people of color organization that's culturally specific, and we don't ever want to lose the spirit of that. We also analyze things a lot deeper, including that, you know, I question, why is it that, you know, you have the LGBTQ QA, but then you don't have TS for two-spirited. You don't have L for same-gender loving, you know. So so the terminology that's specific to our communities of color that we use, again, where is it?
Wow. Well, break it down, Gabby. Thank you so much. You know, what I wanna, you know, just to come to then is, you know, a little further about history and to talk about the fact that, you know, this was the, you know, the 47th or so anniversary of June Pride Month. So this is happening during Pride Month. And, you know, there are, you know, I'm wondering if, you know, there are linkages to the Stonewall Rebellion, you know, with the understanding that that resistance that occurred was largely people of color who were also at a nightclub at that point. Did you want to talk in any way about that incident, and if there are connections to or ways that you might link that to what just occurred?
Yeah,
before
that, can why don't you talk about what the Stonewall Rebellion is? Everybody may not know.
Yeah, so the Stonewall Rebellion, it just reached its 47th year, 1969, in New York City in the Greenwich area. What you had was a series of, and I'm going to say decades, because that year landmarks is seen as monumental, but this had been happening for decades, for generations. And law enforcement targeting, policing in the name of community policing, targeting LGBT communities. You know, back then there were no safe spaces to network, to get support, and to build community. And so the safe spaces that the community did have were being compromised. And so Stonewall riots were a way of organizing and resisting. You know, there are commonalities with Orlando But I think that the one thing to look at here is that with the Stonewall riots, at least there was time to do some sort of resisting and organizing. And one example that I like to share is that, you know, we really need to do more of that. I think we've lost the flavor of that type of activism and really getting together in someone's living room and saying, okay, this is going on, let's do this. And I think that the white community does a lot in erasing that, and even historically in the curricula that we receive in the books, when they do talk about Rosa Parks, they never say that it was an organized event. Everybody thinks it's random. And no, this was an organized event. It was plotted. It was planned. There were resources put into it because it was a movement. And so I want to bring note to that. And coming back with Orlando and some of the commonalities that we're seeing we said it's primarily people of color, a lot of Latinos as well, and that's being glossed over. So with the Stonewall riot, we saw that as well in the leadership. Yeah. Of the risks and the courageousness that happened. You know, Marsha P. Johnson wasn't given credit for this, a black trans woman who did advocacy and activism outside of this. Like, I mean, she was even doing HIV policy work on a very grassroots level. You know, we had Sylvia Rivera, 17-year-old transgender Puerto Rican, also a youth voice in this, who were some key leaders, and you had other LGBT people of color, but primarily you had transgender and gender nonconforming people of color who were moving this beyond. And what you see historically now is mostly gay men or white cross-dressers who take most of the credit for this. But with Orlando, you're seeing all of that being glossed over as well. And although we want to build allies and say, yeah, this affects all of us, we are all Orlando, that we also have to give space to recognizing that there are people of color here, and this was strategically done to hurt this communities of color space.
Thank you for making those linkages. Miss Alice, did you have another one of our last questions, I guess, for the evening, huh?
Yeah, we're getting close to that time. I don't know if you know much about this. I'm going to ask another question. We understand that this was a breach of a safe haven of sorts, as Pulse was a place that many in the LGBTQ community frequented. And this is not uncommon across all LGBTQ communities. Do you have any thoughts about how this has breached that safe space place for the community?
Yes, I mean, we're all anti-violence advocates here on the phone, right? And I'm going to use parallels. Yeah. So, for example, with sexual assault, being sexually assaulted from an intimate partner, when you've established trust and you've established this love, and you know, and then you get violated in that way, your closest, safest person, who shared intimate pillow talk with, then hurts you. So I know that we're looking at, you know, what happened in Orlando, that the person that committed this crime and this assault was not part of the community, but the safe space was there, and that safe space was cultivated by community building and building those relationships and people taking risks. And I bet on that dance floor and at that bar there were stories about coming out. I bet at that dance floor and at that bar there were stories about, like, you know, my parents aren't accepting me and this is where I come because you get me, man. You know, those type of conversations, or couples finding that that's the only place that they could hold hands or dance without being ridiculed. So this is a space that was terrorized. And for others watching who also have the same type of safe havens, then the question comes up, am I really safe? So for those of us who are LGBT and are part of communities of color and we live at the intersections of oppression, then it brings that question, like, where am I truly safe? And we don't just live alone. We're a part of a community. We have family. We have loved ones. So when we think about our safety is tied to someone else. You know, we're not, when we always think about community. It's a we. It's not an I. So that's a lot at stake. And thinking about, you know, our children, our elders, and just keeping each other safe. We talk about self-care, and this is the time to really dig deep on how we can practice peer care, you know, holding each other closer, making sure everybody's okay, and using this opportunity to fortify ourselves and really build that social capital that we need to take on the long-term systemic issues that are going to guarantee that our children and other LGBT youth and other LGBT communities of color get to run to these safe havens and really feel like they're not going to be compromised on. So, yeah, it's a scary time to be, but we also have support, and we also have a network. And the fact that I'm on the phone here on a national call with, you know, people from various parts of the state, that feels safe to me. And I'm hoping that callers can build on this and lend your support on how you can be a safe person, whether it's in your home, into school, at your workplace, and really model behaviors that are going to eliminate this type of targeting. Whether it's, you know, it starts out with interpersonal violence. It could be domestic violence, sexual assault, bullying, any sort of hate crime. All of that hate is interconnected. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time to be on the show with us tonight. And so this is a hard topic to talk about, and you did a wonderful job of keeping the flow going. And usually, for the most part, you did most of the talking. So we appreciate you. And why don't you give our listening audience some contact information, if you're okay with that, in case somebody else wants to continue this conversation with you.
Yeah, so at Inner Own Voices, you can reach us at 518-432-4188. My personal email address is gsantos@innerownvoices.org. And I invite all of you to participate in our National LGBT People of Color Health Conference that is taking place October 12th through the 15th. In Albany, New York, at the Desmond Hotel. You contact me or go to our website, which is IOOVUTD.com, for the Unity Through Diversity website.
Now, repeat that website again. You did it so fast. Try it again.
Yes, IOOVUTD.com. That's for In Our Own Voices, UnityThroughDiversity.com. So, again, IOOVUTD.com. That's for the Unity Through Diversity Conference. And then we have our organization website, which is inourownvoices.org.
Great. Now, that was good. Thank you. I really appreciate you being on the air with us tonight and taking time to have this conversation with us. Tanya, do you have any last words you want to say?
I just want to say, Gabby, you know, we understand that we reached out to you very, very little time to turn around and have a conversation with us tonight. And as you also shared, that you are both of the community and serving the community. And so that is the dual role and sort of the both and experience that that we have as communities of color who are doing this, that are doing work to liberate and serve our communities. If there is any last words that you, just in a sentence, do you have any last words that you just want to share for folks this evening as we wrap up?
I want to challenge everybody to take this as a daily interest, not just because it's sexy right now that this is happening or whatever the media, it might be sensationalizing it away, but these are our lives. and our communities. We exist every day. So beyond what happened in the recent events, we need to see you at our events. We need you to be the allies every day, all day. And thank you for tuning in.
Thank you, Gabby. And I'm usually the one who closes out the show. And so tonight what I want to say is that this was a hate crime. The bottom line, it was a hate crime. We had people coming together to share a fun evening, to enjoy themselves, to socialize, to get to know each other, to have a good time, who was not any way, shape, or form looking to hurt anyone. This man came into their sacred space and waited till the end of the evening and began to destroy lives, began to destroy community, began to destroy hope. It is time for us as a society to look at the bigger picture and realize we must begin to think differently about what's going on in this country and what we can do to change some of this behavior. This is a wonderful country. We should be filled with love, not with hate. We should show caring, not despising. And we cannot allow people to continue to act in such a way and not have any consequences for it. Yes, in this case, this man lost his life as well. But look at all the lives and the families that were destroyed because of his actions. So I want to thank our listening audience for being with us. I want folks to begin to pay attention to what's going on. I want us to be able to speak up as a group and begin to demand some changes take place in this country to make it better for all of us. Thanks to Gabby and to Tanya for being on the air tonight. Thanks to the listening audience for taking time out to hear us. And we hope that things are going well for everyone. We're now getting into the summer months, and so there should be a lot of fun activities happening. Thank you, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Color Network Hour. We hope that you enjoyed the show and found the topic and information useful. If you have any questions about the content of tonight's show or want to learn more about the Women of Color Network, please visit our website at womenofcolornetwork.org. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.